It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
Tell me the one thing that you want out of your team in football, and that is pretty much, no matter what, it's going to be trophies, isn't it? Welcome to Marco's Eye on La Liga podcast, Marco English's official English language podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and, well, we're going to be talking about Real Madrid winning the Club World Cup. They are the world champions. They deliver those trophies that they want. That's why they have so many fans. That's why everyone loves Zinedine Zidane, basically. And speaking of people who love Zinedine Zidane, I'm delighted to be joined this week for the Marca podcast with Jason Pettigrew. How's it going, mate?
I'm really good, thanks, Mark. And I don't just love Zinedine Zidane, I love everybody. As long as, you know, as long as it's to do with Spanish football, it's all good.
Absolutely, that's what we'll be talking about in this week's show. We'll be having a nice little chat about how Real Madrid got the better of Gremio in Abu Dhabi over the weekend, with Barcelona winning as well, Atletico Madrid winning, but Valencia losing as we talk title race. And then in our alternative focus section, we'll be having a little chat about the relegation battle, because it's suddenly gotten quite interesting at the bottom of La Liga, so we'll be casting our eye over that. But of course, there is only one place to start, and that is Los Blancos. They went to Abu Dhabi and they claimed a 2-1 victory over Al Jazeera in the semi-final, and went on to beat Gremio 1-0, the Brazilian Copa Libertadores champions. Downed. They didn't have their best player, Jason. There's Arthur was the sort of main man for Gremio. The sort of other players like Loran and Grohe, the goalkeeper, who were the big threats that we were talking about. Would you say that this is a tournament? I don't know. I just felt like it was kind of lacking something in a sense, because Gremio, I thought they were almost worse than Al Jazeera in a weird sense of the word. What did you take from this Club World Cup victory for Real Madrid? Does it sit for you alongside, you know, a UEFA Super Cup or Supercopa de España victory? Or is this the sort of lesser of the tournaments that they've won in the last few years?
I just think it's a farce, the whole tournament. I've never really agreed with it anyway. And I was reading not so long ago how way, way back when it was called the Intercontinental Cup, or I think it was the Toyota Cup at some stage as well, that the clubs actually had to sign a contract to make sure they turned up for it. And so, I mean, I think that shows you even back then the sort of contempt that the clubs sort of held for it. And I just think now, it's especially the timing of it as well. It's right before Christmas. Obviously, Real have got a massive game against Barcelona coming up. So had they have got any injuries, thankfully they haven't, but had they have, or any cards that would have had an effect, Zinedine Zidane and, you know, the team would have been, you know, incandescent about that. It's just, for me, it's just a FIFA junket. It's going, FIFA going in different sort of areas of the world, trying to push their brand forward without any real, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a money-making exercise for FIFA. I can't see how it benefits Real Madrid playing against teams like that. I mean, Gremio were awful. I know they were missing Arthur, as you said, but, I mean, even if they'd have had him playing, I don't think they had a shot on target. And every time they got forward, which wasn't a lot, it was just side to side, backwards. Rarely did they get the ball in the box. It just makes a farce of playing those games.
I would say there is a part in football. Maybe it's a pre-season tournament, maybe it's something else for this sort of tournament. But the odd thing that makes me kind of want to agree with you is the fact that Al Jazeera were there. Al Jazeera, you know, they've won the UAE Championship. It's a fine tournament to win. But they're not a continental champion. They are a host nation. And for anyone who says, oh, no, this is a big tournament that does really matter, why would you put in a team that effectively are there, you know, like Qatar are going to be at the World Cup in a large sense, a team, you know, a bit token almost. And actually, I did, as I say, I do kind of felt like they gave Real Madrid a better game in the semi-final.
I think they did because, you know, nobody expected it, probably least of all Real. And I think, you know, that complacency was probably what did for them. I mean, fortunately, they did win the game in the end. But, I mean, again, to sort of take it back one step, from a supporter point of view, look at how Real took 800 people there. I think Gremio took 6,000, but that's only because they've been in the final for the first time since 95. It's been played in Japan, I think, 8 times. I think this was the 3rd time it's been played in the Emirates. Okay, for certain teams, it is going to be a big deal. When you get to play against teams like Real Madrid, of course, it might be the only time, you know, in their career that these players get to play against them. They're going to raise their game. But, you know, I don't see how it benefits the bigger teams that go into it. Invariably, it's always the European champions that win it. And they get that nice little badge on their shirts for another year. Yes, there have been one or two upsets, but generally it's always the Champions League winners. Maybe, as you suggested, maybe it's something if they can put it into, you know, like a summer pre-season or something like that, if they can fit it in somewhere else. I know the Super Club World Cup they're talking about that is scheduled to begin in 2021. That will be a summer tournament, but again, coming when it does, right on top of Christmas, people can't really afford to go there. So you've only really got locals populating the stands as well. It just, the whole thing, it's a nonsense.
Let's talk about Madrid then, because obviously they've come away with another trophy. It's, I think we had an article on Mark in English that you can go check out listening to this, where Zidane, on the night of the tournament, it was every 89 days that he wins a trophy now for Real Madrid. He has got that happy knack of winning finals. I just wonder, Jason, does the fact that Real Madrid seem to be playing a lot of finals, I think that's probably because they win the Champions League and that puts you into so many other tournaments as well, as we've just spoken about, but the idea that Real Madrid are winning a trophy every 89 days, does that kind of take the shine off of a Club World Cup victory? Or is it actually just that just shows how good they are at the moment?
I think, again, notwithstanding just what I've just said about the tournament per se, from Zinedine Zidane's point of view, I mean, since he's taken over in January 2016, as you say, I mean, he just can't stop winning, and I think you have to take your hat off to him. You know, it's all very well saying, oh, well, of course, you know, Real Madrid are going to win, you know, all these tournaments, but as we've seen with other managers at other clubs, when they leave, it isn't actually that easy for people that come in to sort of get to finals, let alone win them. So the fact that virtually every final he's going in for, he's winning, they're becoming a very, very good tournament team. Yes, they're off the pace in the Liga, but there's nothing to say that, you know, they're going to not get back into it in the latter stages of the season. So I think, you know, anyone that, again, wants to sort of downplay Zidane's achievements, you know, they really have to sort of take a look at themselves, because you can't argue with that sort of record.
No, it does make me think in a way. It's kind of like when, I don't know, if you're playing FIFA or something like that on the PlayStation, you think, actually, this is a little bit easy and maybe I should be winning every game. Well, then go and win every game. If it is that easy, then, you know, you still have to go and prove it. You still have to go and do it. And that is what Zidane does. There's certainly no arguing with how many medals he's got around his neck. I want to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, but first I'm going to highlight something that's there's only positives about Luka Modric at the moment for Real Madrid. The start of the season, there were a few questions around him, but Modric, I really think, was the best player at this tournament. He won the Golden Ball. Not every Real Madrid player could really hold their head high in both their performances, but I mean, Modric, I put him alongside Kevin De Bruyne at the moment as those are the two best midfielders in the world. Would you agree with that, or would you say there are other candidates as well?
I think you can potentially bring Isco into that equation, but I would certainly agree at this point that Modric and De Bruyne are up there, and I'd probably put Modric at the top. He's the one that makes Real Madrid tick. I think, you know, he's the sort of player that you ask his teammates, you know, a bit like Barcelona were with Xavi, you know, and Iniesta, for instance. They make the team tick. It's almost like you don't know they're there, but when they're not there, then you really notice their absence. And I think he did get the best player of the tournament, and that was fully deserved. I mean, in both games, he didn't let his head drop. He was always asking for the ball, you know, always there, you know, didn't hide. Even if, again, you say it was only Al Jazeera, he didn't care. His level of his game was at the highest, as it's always been. So, you know, I think it'll be a sad day when he's no longer around, and that's not going to be too long in the future, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, he's into his 30s now, Luka Modric. And alongside him, Toni Kroos is a player who's now, alongside Cristiano Ronaldo, has the fourth Club World Cup / Intercontinental Cup title, which is unmatched by any other players. It's just those two at the front of that queue now. I have a bit of a thing with Toni Kroos at the moment, because when, you know, in my maths class, when I couldn't do something, my teacher would point to a student next to me and say, well, if they can do it, why can't you? I'm almost pointing at Luka Modric at the moment and saying, well, if he can be so incredible and so useful for Real Madrid, why isn't Toni Kroos doing that?
I think that's doing a bit of a disservice to Toni Kroos. I mean, he's hardly been bad, has he? I just think perhaps, you know, with Modric, he's always at such a high level that trying to compare someone to him when they just have even a slight off day. I mean, you know, you name me a game where you think Toni Kroos has underperformed, because I actually can't think of one.
Well, no, I find it strange. I think the main reason I have this feeling is because Modric is that unsung hero role, as you say, like sort of Xavi for Barcelona. He wasn't the Messi, he's not the Ronaldo, and yet he gets praise. And yet Kroos doesn't get, I would say, anything like the praise that Modric gets. And I find that a little bit weird. Maybe it is because it's a little bit unfair on Kroos. Maybe he's just, you know, not delivering at the exact moment in a game when people are watching or paying most attention. But I think it's one to keep an eye on, maybe to focus on and really wonder exactly what it is that Modric is doing so much better than Kroos. Because it's undeniable that he gets, you know, he's got the golden ball. He gets a lot more attention, doesn't he?
Yeah, but I think, again, it's like when you get the players that are performing week in, week out, there is a tendency to not underplay what they're doing. It's just, oh, you know, that's what Kroos does. You know, there's an expectation there each and every week, no matter the opposition. And I think it's only when something, you know, sort of extra spectacular, if you want to say that, they do something like that, that's when the headline sort of makers will put his name in there. I think, you know, he's a player that's at a very high level every week. That's why he plays every week. That's why Zinedine Zidane has him as one of the first names down on his team sheet. And, you know, I think, again, you know, Modric probably in a season or two will be retired or certainly playing somewhere else. And I think that's when perhaps, you know, Kroos will be getting the headlines that he should really be getting at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how that one develops. Kroos being the younger player, obviously, maybe he will step up and rightly claim that sort of throne that Modric has at the moment. Speaking of thrones, Cristiano Ronaldo is undoubtedly at the top of it at the moment when it comes to world football. Whether you think he deserved the Ballon d'Or or not, he won it, and he also won the Club World Cup. Man of the match performance in the final, scoring the winner. Well, he wants to be the best paid player in the world, Jason. We've been reporting this on Marca in English over Sunday afternoon. He wants to claim that top step of the podium away from Neymar and Lionel Messi. Is this really the sort of thing that he needs to be worrying about at the moment? Is it not the football that's more important?
That's clearly what drives him on. You know, he wants to be the best. He's always got people shoving it in his face about Lionel Messi. And I think even the crowd at one of, or even both the games at the Club World Cup were chanting Messi's name while he was playing.
That's just trolling.
Well, precisely. But I think it's slightly unfair. I mean, he, again, you know, he always does his level best, you know. So, okay, yeah, some days, you know, he doesn't hit the heights. But what you can't say about Cristiano Ronaldo is that he doesn't try. He's one of the hardest working players in the game, and that's why he's up there as one of the best. The thing for me, and I mean, it's not a knock to him or to Messi or to anyone else, I hate the thing with the Ballon d'Or and FIFA's the best now, where it just seems to be a vote for your friends. And, you know, to me, it has to be a definable set of metrics for a player to then be called, in inverted commas, the best player in the world. You know, if he were to come out of that particular thing on top, then, you know, you'd rightly say, okay, yeah, he deserves to be there. But, you know, what constitutes the best player in the world? Is it the amount of goals a player scores? Is it the amount of trophies his team win? Is it how influential he's been in games? That's never really been told to sort of a layman. And it's just a question that, you know, yes, we can see with our own eyes, Ronaldo and Messi have been the two best players over the last 10 years. But let's put it down on paper and understand exactly why they are the two best players.
Yeah, well, if you go through the stats, it time and time again does show Ronaldo and Messi incredibly similar on so many fronts. And I suppose that's why it's almost a blessing for us and a curse for them that they are up against each other so often to an extent. I mean, on the Ballon d'Or fact, I do tend to agree with you that these are popularity contests. Purely, I mean, I love Gianluigi Buffon, but he was not, I think he was fourth in the Ballon d'Or. He's not the fourth best player in the world. He's not even the fourth best goalkeeper anymore. I love the man, but it was a bit of a, you know, pat on the back, off you go sort of award, which I don't think the Ballon d'Or is really meant to be. Going back to Ronaldo then, we have Barcelona down as occasionally Messi-dependent. Are Real Madrid Ronaldo-dependent, and is that a bad thing?
It's never a bad thing. Are they Ronaldo-dependent? Perhaps not so much as Barcelona are Messi-dependent, but of course they rely on his goals and how important he is. We only have to look at from the sort of the back end of last season, and also obviously, you know, the finals in this, when the big moments arrive, he's there, stood tall, and he makes a difference. And, you know, I think regardless of whether he does anything else in the game, if he is the match winner, as he was at the weekend, that's what he's paid for. So how can you criticise him?
Well, that's as he said after the game. He said, my numbers speak for themselves. And Cristiano Ronaldo, when it comes to numbers, he's got some big numbers. We can never deny that. Real Madrid, then, they are actually 11 points down in La Liga now after Barcelona beat Deportivo La Coruña 4-0 on Sunday evening. We'll be discussing that game in just a second. But I will give you a quick mention now that later in the week, just before El Clásico, which takes place at 1 p.m. Spanish time, Saturday, December 23rd, probably about Friday, you'll see Eye on La Liga Clásico preview special. Hopefully myself, Jason, maybe you and as well, will be sitting down to talk all things Clásico. So get ready for that one. And in the meantime, we'll be in just a second talking that Barcelona game, as well as Atletico Madrid winning and Valencia losing again. So, Jason, when we come to talk about the man of the match for the Barcelona game against Deportivo on Sunday night, I've got a candidate for you, and that is the woodwork. Because when it comes to stopping Barcelona, I've never seen an inanimate object do so well.
I think, was it five times in the end? I've never known that in a game. I mean, I've seen the woodwork rattled, you know, a couple of times, maybe even three. But, I'd be hard-pushed to try and find a game where the woodwork's been rattled on five occasions. And, I mean, it was 4-0. Quite easily could have been 10. Don't forget the penalty was saved as well. I think it's 25 occasions now this season Barcelona have hit the woodwork. And so, again, you know, how can anybody knock, you know, Valverde's Barcelona? I keep hearing things such as, you know, they're not hitting the heights, they're not the Barcelona of old. They're the only unbeaten team in Europe in all competitions. It baffles me. I mean, as you just said, they're 11 points ahead of what we would perceive to be their closest rivals at the end of the season. I know Real have now got a game in hand. That makes the Clásico this coming weekend, you know, just a season-defining game in terms of Real's aspirations, in my opinion. But I think, you know, OK, they might not be at their swashbuckling best Barcelona, but they're getting the job done. And, you know, I think, you know, Valverde's, again, been criticised for being a quiet man. He's sensible. He knows how he wants his teams to play. Every time there's a problem, he's come up with a solution. I think they're doing everything exactly right.
Against Deport, without Sergio Busquets, he was on the bench for the 90 minutes, given the fact that if he got booked, he would have missed the Clásico. So wise move there from Valverde to drop the Spaniard. Suarez and Messi, however, did play the 90 minutes. Suarez getting two, and Paulinho getting two. And I mean, I don't think we've really touched on the Paulinho thing on this podcast, Jason, because I remember when he played for Spurs, I remember thinking that he was a decent player. He got quite a few goals, sometimes labelled a bit of a liability, and then he went off to China, and you kind of think that's that. But the way he's come back, I mean, we have to pay a bit of homage to Paulinho, in my opinion, because the Chinese league is nowhere near the quality and the tempo and the technical ability of La Liga. And Paulinho has taken the jump into Spain in his stride, hasn't he? It's so impressive.
He has, but I think I'll revert back to an interview that some of the listeners might have seen that I did with Pele back in September. And one of the questions I asked Pele was, you know, why did he go to China? And Pele was quite upfront and straightforward and said, actually, he didn't want to go. His agent basically made him go there. He had offers from Italy. I think in the Premier League, he also had offers as well. So were he allowed to, as it were, he would have gone. But the agent insisted he went to China. And I think, again, a lot of people that believe they know football, they were quite happy to dismiss Paulinho as, oh, you know, he was Tottenham's worst ever player, according to their supporters, and now he's gone off to China, so he must be rubbish. Well, actually, you know, he'd captained Brazil recently, so he can't be that bad. And I think it's been shown that, yes, £40 million is a lot of money. Oh, sorry, €40 million, I'm sorry, is a lot of money for a 29-year-old. But he's only, I think, he's the third highest scorer. Only Messi and Suarez are ahead of him. And it's not just goals he's bringing to the table either. He's got, yeah, that dynamic box-to-box ethic, what Barcelona really have been missing. And he's become a very, very useful addition. So I don't think you can knock him at all at this point.
Would you say, in a way, he's actually kind of the player they thought Andre Gomes was going to be, in bringing that physicality and that ability to run, you know, for a good 90 minutes and what Iniesta and Busquets can't do? Was that actually, you know, did they think Gomes was going to be that player?
I think that's a very good point, and I'd agree with that entirely. I mean, that's certainly the role that Gomes was supposed to fulfil. I just think, again, a bit like as Paulinho found at Tottenham, sometimes you go to a club and it just doesn't work. It doesn't mean you're a bad player. It just, you know, means the setup, the style of play isn't for you. If Gomes does leave, which we believe he may do in January, you know, who's to say he's not going to be a success elsewhere? I think, you know, it's happened plenty of times with other players.
Well, yeah, when there's the likes of Juventus and I think Tottenham Hotspur and also being linked with him, and they're good teams, they can make a good player out of Gomes. Perhaps it's just the sort of thing about game time and those sort of things that he needs. Let's move on to Atletico Madrid then. They are rightfully the second best team in La Liga at the moment. 1-10, drawn 6, lost none is certainly not a record to be sniffed at. And they've done it again, haven't they? They pulled off a late 1-0 win against Alaves on Saturday night. Fernando Torres with the goal. I asked Ewan last week if Atletico Madrid are back in the old sense of the word of what we expect Atletico Madrid to be doing. I'm going to ask you the same question because it just continues to be the exact thing that we expect of them, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it's a case of them being back. I don't think they ever went away. You know, you can't argue with second in the table, unbeaten in the league still. They're grinding out wins rather than, you know, sort of winning a lot of them comfortably. But Diego Simeone won't be unhappy about that. I think what we must understand is obviously they've moved to the new ground. Torres even mentioned it again this weekend, saying that he'd like the supporters to be behind them like they were at the Calderon, because it was almost like that was the 12th man. So, you know, when you factor in that, it's almost still like playing in a neutral ground for them. That does have an effect. The fact that they are where they are, you know, you need to take your hat off to them. They've come through, you know, quite a tough period, and they can push on, you know, after Christmas, after the new year. Unfortunately, they're out of the Champions League, and now they've got the Europa League, which may not be as taxing for them. So, you know, who knows? They can be right up there when, you know, the time comes for silverware.
What sort of business do you expect them to be doing in January? Do you expect them to be, you know, really doubling down on a potential La Liga title challenge this year? Or are we going to see more young signings, or maybe even holding off until the summer altogether?
Well, there is some breaking news that they're going to be signing Rodri from Villarreal, but in the summer. In terms of in January, obviously they've got Diego Costa to come back in.
And Vitola, of course.
Vitola. The only thing that concerns me with Costa is I do wonder if the same thing will happen to him as happened with Arda Turan of Barcelona, and to a slightly lesser extent, Alex Vidal, because, you know, yes, you can train as hard as you want, but it's not match fitness, and being out of action in a top division for nigh on 6 months has got to have an effect. Will they sign anyone else? Hard to say. I think their purpose is better served waiting until the summer and then, you know, seeing where they're at, seeing how they've done in the second half of the season. We think Griezmann may go potentially to Barcelona in the summer. That then gives them a nice sort of war chest of cash to be able to shop around. But obviously, you know, they've not been able to sign anybody for the last two windows. So I hope it's not kind of like the kid in the sweet shop scenario where they're just buying people for the sake of it. But they, you know, they may get one or two players in to shore things up.
Yeah, I do expect Atletico. The thing is that it happened with Arsenal in the UK as well, is that when you move into a new stadium, that has a significant effect on your finances, doesn't it? And also the fact they haven't actually completed the sale and the demolition of the Vicente Calderon yet, which I believe is actually going to, you know, be a significant bursar to their own war chest, which probably will come to in the summer. I agree about Griezmann. I think he's gone as far as I'm concerned. So maybe it's the case of Costa and Vitolo are really just going to tick them over and Simeone will continue to have to get the best out of the players. And, you know, they're not bad signings, those two players. But certainly when it comes to experience, you know, if you trade Vieto for Costa, that's not a bad deal at all. And another team that I think are going to have to make some serious business in January if they're going to continue to sort of hold on, and they're sort of holding on to the title race by their fingertips, if at all at the moment, are Valencia. They fell to a 2-1 defeat at Eibar on Saturday. And Jason, this is not what I think. Is it what you saw happening? Because it's not quite how I saw it going.
I'll be honest, I mean, I didn't see this one either. I mean, I know Eibar, you know, they're sort of beginning to turn the corner and they can be difficult to beat at Ipurua. It's a very tight ground. A lot of teams don't like going there. But Valencia have been so good this season. Obviously, they only recently lost their first game. And it's like the phrase, isn't it? London buses. Then another one comes along straight afterwards. I think they missed Simone Zaza quite badly, and that could come back to haunt them. Obviously, he's had the problem, the injury problem for a few weeks, but he's been playing through the pain barrier. Whether now he's out for any significant period of time, we'll have to see. But we did discuss on this podcast a few weeks ago, didn't we, is the consistency that teams need to have. I think that's why Barca and Real Madrid have been so successful over the last few years, is because it's the consistency that they have week in and week out. Other clubs sort of come in and then come back out, drop back out again. You know, Sevilla is another example. You know, let's see, there's one more game now until Christmas. Let's see what happens perhaps in the first, you know, half dozen games into the new year when we've got the Copa del Rey to contend with as well. You know, perhaps February, mid-February is probably a better time to judge what sort of position Valencia will be in by then. I mean, I'm not quite sure I agree with you when you're saying about holding on by their fingertips. I think they deserve to be where they are, but they probably do need to push on again.
Well, we'll leave the title race chat there, given that Sevilla have managed to pull themselves as far away from it as they could possibly have really done since we last spoke about the title race. And we'll finish off then this Iron Eye League episode with a quick look at the relegation battle and a little focus on that. So, Jason, I was planning on talking about this about 2 weeks ago when I was going to tell everyone who listens to this that it's basically a dead horse, the relegation battle. And yet, sitting here now, it's actually gotten quite interesting again. Alaves, Las Palmas and Malaga, the bottom three teams, they've all actually only lost one game apiece in their last three games. Alaves have won two of their last three, with 4 points apiece for Las Palmas and Malaga. Las Palmas fighting back to a bit of a heroic draw on a Sunday at home to Espanyol, going 2-0 down, and then with goals from Loic Remy and Jonathan Calieri in the last 10 minutes. So when it comes to Las Palmas and the relegation battle, what's your sort of take on it? Who do you think is really missing the facet they need to stay in the league, and who's actually who's impressing you at the moment?
I think Alaves under Abelardo are starting to impress me. They've got the sort of a coherent sort of structure and a team shape there, and he's got them playing, you know, as they were the sort of end of last season. They had a horrible run, but they've sort of dragged themselves off the bottom. Yes, it's only by a point, but you can see sort of the green shoots of recovery there. Espanyol for me are dropping like a stone. I know that the locals are very, very unhappy with Quique Sanchez Flores. They're just not getting the luck. I think what you tend to find with teams that are down the bottom, when there's bad luck to be handed out, it always seems to go to those teams. And, you know, yeah, they were 2-0 up today against Las Palmas. They should have really seen that out. I think it was only 10 minutes to go and they end up drawing. Decent result that for Las Palmas, but they've not really done a great deal. You know, the changing managers left, right and centre. And I think that's a very sort of slippery slope to start on. You need to, however badly your team are playing, you've got to, you know, give it less, sort of more than sort of half a dozen games for a manager to sort of bed down his ideas, etc. Malaga are down there as well, had a horrific start. You know, have they turned the corner as well? It's so tight. It's a top three. You know, after Depor's loss today, Alaves are within a victory of being on terms with them. And then obviously the next two or three teams above them, actually I'm looking at it now, five teams above them are then within another win. It's with Malaga and Las Palmas. Unless they pick up a win in the next sort of two or three games, they're going to be cut adrift. So if you're asking me to sort of name who I think is going to be struggling rest of the season, at this moment I would suggest Las Palmas most certainly, Espanyol most certainly, and potentially Malaga. I think, you know, Alaves have got enough about them to start pulling themselves out of it.
Yeah, what I find interesting at the moment is that those three teams in the bottom three are the, you know, the informed ones that we just said, but the three teams above them are the ones that I really worry about. Levante started the year in such good form. They were undefeated for a good few games. They were, you know, flirting with the top four in the early weeks, and they've since dropped like a stone, and they've actually only won three games all season. And for a newly promoted team, I think it's such a slippery slope. I haven't seen it before with newly promoted teams across Europe, really. As soon as you go on that slope and you realise, actually, maybe we're not as good as we sort of needed to be or thought we are, that's when it gets difficult. And Levante pulling themselves back into that early season form is going to be a really difficult task for them. I agree on Espanyol. I thought it was interesting early in the week. We have some quotes on Marco English from Quique Sanchez Flores, who said that he doesn't really know what sort of project Espanyol are forming. They looked really good last season. Now they're off the pace. Malaga looked really good last season, sold all the best players. They're talking about Sandro Ramirez coming back to Malaga in January, actually. Do you think that's the sort of, you know, Deportivo La Coruña have Lucas Perez, didn't really work out. Sandro Ramirez going to Malaga, do you think that's a move that would suit Malaga, would suit the player?
I definitely think it would suit the player. I think it would also suit the club. I don't want to use the term clutching at straws, but he obviously was fantastic for them before he left. And it's, they have this saying, don't they, never go back. And I'm not sure how many players that have gone back to former clubs have actually done as well as they did before they left. So if they're pinning all their hopes on him, I think that's a bad move. But having said that, you know, they've got to try something, and he does score goals, which, I mean, they've not scored, I think they've scored 13, which is, I think, the joint second worst in the division. So clearly they need someone that can stick the ball in the back of the net. If he comes at a good price, or even if he's on loan, you know, get him in and let's see what he can do.
Let's round off this discussion then with a quick word on the three teams who are on 18 points. So they're only 6 points above the relegation zone. Do you have any sort of worry about Celta Vigo, Real Betis, or even Athletic Bilbao, who sit in 14th at the moment? Really, you know, when you talk about struggling for scoring goals, they are that team. Any worries for those teams in terms of being dragged into that relegation battle?
I think it's a worry at the moment because, Celta are in 12th, which you'd think, okay, yeah, nice mid-table, but they are only on 18 points, which is only three off a fourth bottom. Out of all of those, you know, I think Celta, as we saw against Barcelona, have got more than enough about them that when they put in a performance, they can pull themselves out of the sort of spiral they're in without any problem. The one for me who I'd be worried about would be Athletic, because they're so used to sort of being up in the Europa League places, there or thereabouts, having really nice, comfortable seasons. And just something's not right there. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like the coaching methods. You know, Valverde's obviously moved on from there. They're just not, the players are not responding. And again, they haven't scored too many goals. And when you consider some of the players that they have, like Iñaki Williams, We always talk about the evergreen Harry Zadarif. You know, they've got players there that can put the ball in the back of the net, and it's just not happening for them. And 4 wins out of 16 for a club of that stature, you know, isn't good at all. I just, you know, I hope for their sake that they can turn the corner perhaps in the new year. But, you know, maybe the only way they can do that is by bringing one or two fresh faces in.
Yeah, it'd be a real shame to see a cathedral of football like San Mamés to be hosting Segunda Division football. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look too likely at the moment. So we'll hold off on any doomsaying for Athletic Club at the moment and let the Cucos de Ganda get on with the job. Well, that rounds up this episode of Eye on La Liga. Thank you very much for joining us, Jason.
Thanks for having me, Mark, as always. I'll speak to you before El Clasico.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we've got a few games in La Liga to look forward to before then in terms of the relegation battle. Levante versus Leganes on the 19th, Alaves versus Malaga on the 21st, Betis play Bilbao on the 22nd, and Deportivo play Celta Vigo on the 23rd. Those are just a few of my highlight games to pick out, but there is a game every night in La Liga between now and the Christmas break, which is the 23rd of December. The Saturday is the final day of La Liga action. It's also the day the Clásico is. We'll be back to preview Clásico just before the weekend. Look out for that. And in the meantime, enjoy the La Liga action. It's only about a week ago now until the Christmas break. So please join us next time, and thank you for listening.
Served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.